are crucifixes and images of the crucifixion, mercifully only gesture to the truth of the matter. We do not smell the odors. We do not hear the sounds. We do not see a figure like our own writhing on a wooden post. I hope and pray that our technology never advances to a moment where we can replicate those terrible sights so that we routinely witness the actuality of the terrible fact as we do in the images we have now. I'm not so sure that we could bear it. And I don't know how those who did witness, let alone those who were victims, managed it. Crucifixion is an effort to inflict maximum physical pain over a long time. It's not the nails or the exposure or the spear that kills the crucified person. It's the hanging. It is death by asphyxiation. Body hanging by its arms means the chest is fixed and the diaphragm muscles are working against gravity, making it ever harder to breathe. And with ever smaller breaths possible, the exhausted body loses energy. Like all with struggling hearts and lungs, fluid builds up, and the victim dies a tortured death marked by extreme bodily pain. Every action causes pain, and inaction causes death. And beyond even those sordid and terrible facts, it has an even more callous element. Crucifixion is designed to utterly humiliate a person, to remove any sense of dignity or identity or self-integrity from the one being crucified. A crucified person is one who is utterly alone, removed from all that makes us human, and lifted up in a world that knows only pain. That image above our altar is a gesture, and a gesture only, to the actual act. Even on this most solemn day, it is impossible for us to understand what a complete scandal the crucifixion is. Faithful Jews will think of the story of Abraham leading his son Isaac to the place of sacrifice, only to be relieved of his burden at the last moment by God. For those outside the faith, it is the crucifixion that bears the brunt of their unbelief. Why would God allow this to be done to his son? Why would God allow to be done what God prevented Abraham from having to do? What kind of God permits the torture and execution of his son? How in the world can we understand this? These are good questions for Good Friday. They are good questions for us as well as for those who first saw the crucifixion, for those in communities of belief and those in communities that choose to reject. And we can safely assume that it was to these types of communities that John, the author of the Passion narrative we just read, addressed his gospel account. John answers these most fundamental questions with a reminder that it was not God the Father who allowed the torture and death of his only son, but rather the act of the Son, choosing to lay down his life in a way that emptied himself even of the air needed to breathe. For it was Jesus who, as recounted in the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John, told his followers that I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. We heard this again and again in the Passion narrative. There's an edge within this text, beyond even the terrible facts of betrayal and crucifixion. It is Jesus who chooses what happens. It's Jesus who allows this to happen. It's Jesus who lays down his life. It is Jesus who expresses his kingship in the most terrible of tortures by demonstrating that it is he who is in control. Even in the most counterintuitive, most terrible places, it is Jesus who allows, indeed, even encourages others to act upon him. He set the passion in motion by voluntarily coming forward for his arrest. The temple authorities fall back. Peter intervenes, but Jesus keeps the action moving. On the cross, Jesus connects his mother to the disciple and the disciple to his mother. And then it is Jesus who chooses when to give up his spirit, who decides on the moment of his death. And then he says, "It is finished." But what is finished precisely? It would seem, we hope and pray, from our perspective, that very little is finished. The resurrection is still some time away. Wait, we want to interject. This is not finished at all. This can't be the end of the story. And we know that it is not. What is finished is the work of the cross, the work of God's act of salvation, identifying with sinners, and a human offering of perfect obedience to God's will. That work is finished, though our participation in it continues. Jesus gives up his spirit, but the Spirit will raise the Son and accompany the church so that the Father's love for the world, incarnated in his Son's life and death, will be made visible through the power of the Spirit until the end of time. For us, too, the crucifixion is not the end of the story. Even on the cross, Jesus was ensuring that relationships would continue as he brought together Mary, his mother, and a beloved disciple. The body that was made incarnate in Mary's womb and hung on the cross is also made present to us in the sacrament he instituted in the night before. And ourselves, the church, that community of apostolic believers who share in the faith of Christ, and in the poor with whom Jesus so strongly identified. But even the cross continues, for we follow a God who has gone where we dare to follow. There is the same expectation of a perfect offering of ourselves in obedience. God has done what we cannot do for ourselves in offering the perfect sacrifice. And when we get caught up in Christ's self-sacrifice and empowered through our participation in him to offer ourselves, our souls, and bodies, our imperfections are transformed through his perfection. So this, then, is the test, and this, then, is the opportunity. This is the life of faith that has been offered to us. As Jesus Christ did, can we, in the midst of pain and darkness and abandonment and oppression, can we offer ourselves to God and each other without bitterness or anger, with love and self-sacrifice? Can we give ourselves back to God as on the cross? Martyrs for the faith continue to offer themselves in obedience. We should pray to have the same courage. They have embraced the cross, and so should we. But what the martyrs know, and we should remember, is that love and life are carried in the soul, not the body. For it is Jesus' sacrifice that is finished, that is complete, even as his earthly body hung on the cross. And yet our participation in that sacrifice continues. And so we know the cross not as defeat, not as the contemptuous act of an angry father inflicting pain on a son. We know the cross as the ultimate act of love and mercy, a perfect sacrifice for the salvation of the world.